All right, Survivor Specialist Jonna McKenna are back, and we are talking Rewind for this episode of season 44. I'm pumped.
Yeah, I mean, this was a very interesting episode. It had some really great moments for us to hearken back on. McKenna, we have our first new era swap, which we are going to get into a lot of detail about, but how are you feeling about it?
It's my least favorite swap because it's that one person gets screwed over from it. Not screwed over necessarily, but like I don't like the one person in a sea of many. Some of these swaps that we're gonna get to later on in the episode, but I am happy that we are changing up the game. So that I'm very grateful for.
Yeah, absolutely. And like overall, like this episode was pretty entertaining, despite the fact that it felt, because of the way they implemented the swap where we had the reward challenge first to kind of determine who went on the journey, the episode felt really short to me. It felt like we didn't get a lot of information and we didn't get enough time to really dissect the swap itself, because on old school swap episodes, the swap would be like in place of a reward challenge.
Yeah, I think, well, the reward challenge was also pretty simple, but we'll get there. Let's talk about the opening a little bit here with Carolyn and the big red X with the branches. So we kind of thought this was very similar to the Rick Devens idol plants, where he was using some of the clues that he got to further like confuse the other castaways. So
yeah, I mean, first off, Carolyn did something really interesting with this, because Phil and I talked about it last week on the recap, but what the producers have done with introducing these fake idols that they've made to these contestants is they've really said, okay, contestants, here's this thing, we have this idea of how you should use it, but like, it's in your hands. You make up your mind. And we saw last week Danny put it back in the cage and re-hit the key. And in this instance, we saw something completely different, where Carolyn instead puts a marker on this cage to trick Sarah into finding this idol that she's hidden elsewhere in a camp. And it's so different than anything we've seen, because we've never had this moment where it's like, oh, here's this production made fake idol for you to discover. But at the same time, like you said, it's so evocative of those moments in Edge of Extinction where, and I know Edge of Extinction gets a bad rap because of a twist that like isn't great. I'm gonna say it. But the scene itself is so really great. Entertaining.
On a rewatch, Edge of Extinction is a great, great season. I really like it.
Yeah, it kind of gets this bad rep because like it has that stale, it like gives you that bitter taste in your mouth because of the conclusion of it. But like everything leading up to that moment is actually quite good. And this moment where Rick decides I would get fake idols and hide them places, in camp that are so obvious, people should easily find them. And that's exactly what Carolyn does here.
Yeah, exactly. And so now we're going to move on to the reward challenge. The reward challenge is something that we have seen a lot of in Survivor. It is Survivor slingshots. And we saw them in ye olden days with a handheld slingshot and like marbles that you'd be shooting at a tile, either for like eliminating people. You had to eliminate like at least three corners of the tile to get them out of the challenge, or to like spill sand out of a tower to help you. There was just a lot of handheld slingshots in the early days.
Yeah, handheld slingshots were kind of like a staple of Survivor for a long time.
I mean, started season one.
Yeah, started in season one. There's some iconic moments with handheld slingshots all the way through like the first 10 seasons of the show the first 9 seasons until it's kind of replaced with a gun. In wow, but that made sense thematically, I guess.
Yeah. It was artillery and military themes.
Yeah, exactly. Like there, that was the theme they were going for that season, so it's fine. But yeah, like we've had some pretty like iconic moments with slingshots, really. I always think back to the individual immunity challenge in, what was it, a reward challenge in Pearl Islands, where they're using it. And then of course there's also the interesting thing is because like these handheld slingshots were almost always individual challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Until we get to Vanuatu. And then it's in that swap that we get it, and we see Rory just killing it with a slingshot.
Yes. Well, it's to save his own life. So he really had to keep it going there with the slingshot and try his damnedest to stay alive. I think one of John's favorite slingshot moments is a different type of slingshot. You have two people holding each end. You have one person holding each end and then someone in the middle launching the ball. And it's Gabon, where they're like, just drop it in! Just drop it!
This... I love Gabon. It's no secret. I've literally talked about it multiple weeks in a row now. But this challenging Gabon that utilizes the slingshot, like the slingshot golf, like first off, one of the most unique challenges in Survivor history. It's so fun. It's, and we get so much hilarity because this is, you know, this is the Maddie GIF challenge, right? Like this is the response to blanking. Totally blanking. McKenna, who is it in response to being voted out?
Boot order is not my thing.
Ooh, this was the ace vote? That sounds right. Yeah, we'll go with that. I might be It's been a long time since I watched Gabon. But you get these iconic moments. Like them just arguing. They're literally standing on the target and they're arguing about how far back they have to pull the slingshot. And the big thing with slingshots in Survivor is they're not easy to use.
Yeah.
Like, they require so much more force than you think because these are massive, massive pieces of artillery, essentially, mm-hmm. that have a lot of resistance to them because of their structure and the way that the rubber works. And we've seen it time and time again where people, especially with these larger slingshots, people get really tired when using them. And to see this argument in this challenging Gabon where
they literally
can drop the ball, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still arguing over how much tension to put on the slingshot. It's just one of those perfect moments, in my opinion.
And then after that, we get more toward this slingshot that we're working with for this challenge in 44. And it's the net ball where you have to launch the ball and catch it in the net where you have one person using it. We have iconic moments with that as well. I mean, JT losing his tooth is in that challenge with the slingshots.
Yeah, Wicker Flicker is just an iconic challenge. It actually dates back a lot further than most people might remember because mm-hmm. it dates back all the way to Thailand.
Thailand, yeah.
it's the first time we see people manning a giant slingshot for other people to catch things in their nets. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like Token Jeans has some iconic moments in this. Guatemala has like that's the part of that merge where like the boys are starting to get like really, really overly testosterone-y and start like yep. getting at each other a lot. It's just yeah, but it's just
that physical contact and like your ability to chat with the other tribe when you know, you're trying to in the middle of this challenge, and it's just such an interesting, how do you use this challenge to maybe further your game advantage as well, or just use it to get out your aggression? Like there's so many ways you could take this challenge.
Yeah. And it's really funny because like you see the way that they choose in that type in Wicker Flicker itself, you have to decide like who's banning the slingshot and who mm-hmm. is, you know, catching things.
Right.
It's this interesting decision you have to make, which isn't like what we got in last night's episode of 44. In 44, instead, we see, you know, everyone alternating on the slingshot mm-hmm. in order to hit these targets, which is...
A lot of times, so in this next iteration that we're going to talk mm-hmm. about, it's you can have one person shooting for four targets and switch out. But it's typically the slingshot with the coconut. Mm-hmm. The coconut smacks the target and breaks apart, knocks it over, et cetera, et cetera. The big coconut target slingshot moment is this is my island.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those big moments in One World where, you know, Troy Zen actually gets through it and, you know, plants his foot down as he's being absolutely demolished by all of the girls.
Yeah. And it's these slingshots have been used a little bit in pieces, too, because they've had to build a wheelbarrow and mm-hmm. in South Pacific and then construct it. And then use the wheelbarrow and the parts of the wheelbarrow as their slingshot. So it's just this slingshots are in pretty much every season, if not every other.
Yeah, and South Pacific is kind of our first instance of like this formulaic slingshot challenge that we see here, where it's like, here's an obstacle course, finish with a slingshot, hit the targets. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because watching 44 last night. All in all, it's a fairly simple, straightforward challenge, right? The hit the targets. That's all you have to do. It really harkens back onto those old reward challenges. I mean, even just last week on the Patreon show, we were talking about the challenge in Fiji, where yep. they just have to hit the targets. That's the entire challenge. There are three targets. It's not a lot. They're just rotating through, attempting to hit these targets. And it's kind of nice going back to these simple challenges because it's something different. It's something different than we've seen over the last four seasons.
It's something different, but it's also New Age Survivor-esque because mm-hmm. it is scaled up. Like yeah. this is, I think, the biggest slingshot we have ever seen in the show because it is massive. The targets are massive. And, you know, you can't even knock them over. You have to have the flag come up, and that's more of like recent Survivor is hitting the target with and popping up a flag. And I like the scale of it but that also puts people like, you know, Carolyn was struggling with pulling and the resistance. Like the bigger and farther the targets are, the more resistance and the more you have to pull back.
Yeah, and I think it's just something you have to consider when you're like ordering your tribe for this type of challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a hard thing to accommodate for if you've never done it before, but yeah. you kind of have to be thinking that way. And I mean, I think that's why we don't usually see challenges where the entire tribe is forced to rotate. But mm-hmm. we've seen single people just carry their tribe through this type of challenge before because yeah. you know, even those instances where a tribe falls really far behind, if they get the right person on the slingshot, they come back from behind and win, right? So it's interesting to see. I really like this challenge because, like I said, it's simple. Sometimes the trigger mechanisms don't work on the flags. Also, I like how, like, dinky the flags are compared to the targets. But the simplicity of, like, climbing up, use the slingshot, get back down. Like it's harkening back on an older time in Survivor that honestly production should kind of lean on more if they're insistent on keeping these like short seasons because they're easier to pull off.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the end of this slingshot challenge, the first team to finish won a tarp, which, oh my gosh, we're bringing tarps back. And then the second team got a smaller tarp. So we're getting that like reward of, oh my gosh, a tarp. It brings back like those feelings of older Survivor where you're playing for things that you need to survive. And then the winningest team got to choose the people going on the journey. And we find out that the journey is a swap. So it's interesting that how they choose or how they pick people to go on this journey, because, you know, Carson, well insulated on his tribe, now gets thrown to another. Josh, the odd man out, who they would have loved to vote out, is now no longer here. And then Jamie, who was like kind of on the outs, but getting in with, you know, Matthew and under Matthew's wing, is now ripped from under him. So it kind of likens to a lot of swaps in Survivor Past, and we'll just go in chronological order because I think that's the easiest, and starting with Africa.
Yeah, I mean, Africa, it's the twist, right? It is literally from the episode they called The Twist. It is a moment everyone remembers from Survivor history, and it simply starts with choose three tribe members. They're going on a journey.
On a quest, John.
Oh, on a quest. My apologies. I didn't use the exact right word, but it's essentially the same thing we're getting here, right? Now, the only difference is in that instance, in both instances, nobody really knew what was happening after this quest or journey or whatever you want to call it. But in Africa, they assumed it was a reward challenge. They assumed, okay, these two are going off to compete in a reward challenge. They'll come back. And that really played into who they decided to send on the quest. Mm-hmm. And it made things really interesting when you get the swap because of it.
Yep.
And it's similar here, except I don't know how I feel about a single tribe getting the decision on who they send out here. Now, I think it works here because there's no anticipation of it being a swap. Because we haven't seen one in the new era. I don't know if this is something you could ever replicate.
No, I think there has to be a, you know, first, second, third, or like a pull a rock kind of situation where like they get to choose, or, you know, purple gets to choose for orange, who gets to choose for green, who gets to choose for purple, like something to that effect. But yeah, this Africa really likens to the verbiage of this, of this swap of let's go on this journey and, you know, see what happens. And what happens is a swap, drop your buffs. The next one is Marquesas, one of my favorite seasons, which I have said in multiple podcasts now. Where they stand on a disc and they're not expecting this either. They're just told to stand on this disc. They're probably thinking it's for a challenge. And then they flip over these discs and they are new buffs. And what's the weird thing about it is you're keeping the tribe numbers like this swap here. They're only swapping one member. So we have Tika, who's four members down, who doesn't gain another member. They just swap one. And in Marquesas, Mar-Amu is down significantly, I think by like three members, but Mar-Amu still stays at their original, at their numbers, instead of swapping it to be even.
Yeah, it's one of the most awkward swaps in Survivor history. Also, probably like one of the most pure random swaps we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, stand here. Like, yes, production's put this out. They're not telling you where to stand. Just choose a disc. And you go from there. The thing is like, we don't know if this is how the swap in Africa was going to happen, because the tribes were even in Africa when they got to the swap. So seeing this in Marquesas, where the tribes aren't even, they decide to keep the same tribal numbers and just like shuffle people around, it's weird. And we haven't really had an instance of that in a swap until now.
So I am a big hater of these uneven swaps. If we're swapping, I want tribes to be even. I don't care. Like, if it's supposed to be random, then I don't care if you randomly get screwed over 1-4. Like, that them's breaks. It's happened to me before. So, I just don't like how in 44 you're swapping one person. Granted, yes, they have an idol, which, whoa, but like you're swapping one person over and saying good luck.
It's super awkward because A, yes, you're automatically putting someone in a minority. You're making it very easy for a tribe to vote against them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've seen time and time again in Survivor history where a minority goes into a situation like this and can pull their way through because the majority is chomping at the bit to eat themselves instead. But
when you're swapping here with these like max five member tribes, like
the numbers are too small.
Yeah, there's no
incentive.
Real hierarchy.
And while I do like them getting an advantage, because they don't really get a choice in this. There's no choice to decide. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're quite frankly getting screwed over by production here to the point where this is where my real beef with this comes from. I don't know how random it was that these people changed to which tribes they changed to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if they happened to go down the path and like, I don't know if,
yeah,
so how Jamie went down the path that Carson went down. Does she stay on the same tribe or does she change? I'm more inclined to think production decided which buffs to put in these things as they selected their paths.
Yeah.
Now that's a little negative of me, and I could be completely wrong.
I was thinking the same thing of like, how do we know? Or like, if there are all three buffs in, how does Carson and Jamie not pick both purple?
Yeah, right. So clearly, I think there was some like production tampering with this one, which makes it a little like, okay, I guess so. And like the problem with giving them these advantages, these idols that expire when both tribes are living, when all contestants are living on the same beach or however it was phrased, which I mean, quite frankly, probably just means that, you know, there's a mergatory again. And which is why they didn't say good until merge, because it won't be good at that vote. But you're incentivizing these players to vote out or to use this idol, right? Because it's only good until that moment. So you're just saying, hey, here's this situation where you should, by all accounts, vote this person out. But they're safe and it's going to screw over one of you. And you're just gone because of it. Because they are incentivized to play this idol to take out one of your numbers.
Yeah. I mean, they could do it for this first round, for this first vote, and then the next vote be gone themselves, like depending on where and when this is played. We kind of likened this, them getting the immunity idol to the Pearl Islands Outcast. We're going to call it a swap because they technically could have drawn either buff. The Pearl Islands Outcast twist, where Lil and Burton were both immune coming into their tribes. And so if their tribe were to go to tribal council, they were given immunity to reintegrate themselves into their tribe. But they already know this is the big twist. Is like everybody knows that they have immunity for the vote and can plan accordingly. We're like giving them an idol.
Yeah, it's like I was saying, right? Like this is not a twist. Like this advantage is not to protect the person who gets swapped. It's to screw someone in the majority. And Survivor has this thing where they really like these big moments, right? They love people getting idled out. They think it's a big flashy moment, but they don't seem to understand that the more times you do that, the less special it is.
Mm-hmm.
So in all honesty, like I think this was a flop. I think it's really disappointing to see it work this way. I do think we are getting to that point where production's really meddling with the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see them dial it back in the future. Hopefully, like, they're listening to all of this type of, you know, there's been a lot of feedback about this season based on, like, what we've been seeing so far. Yeah. Hopefully, production's listening to it. But like, this isn't the first time we've seen a swap go exactly like this. Like, we have seen swaps go where there's been one person in the minority before.
Mm-hmm.
Like the next one chronologically, the next season chronologically, yeah, is what we were talking about.
Yes. So we are going to All Stars next, the Amber by herself swap, where this just quote unquote fell that way, where they are going back to even numbers on two tribes. And one person was the only person not to pick the opposite buff to join her original Shapara tribe, and that's Amber. And she is rejoining Shapara, but with all of the old Moga Moga members. And she is just a sitting duck. And with it being an old school season, she should have been out right away, but because of the All Stars of it all, and like their friends outside of the game, their friendships and stuff played so much into this decision. If you want to hear John and I discuss this swap more, join the Patreon. This is the episode we are discussing over there. So become a $10, $20 patron. And listen to John and I talk all about this swap on Survivor All-Stars. So we're going to move along from this one, yes, and not discuss it further. And talk about Palau, where it's sort of a swap, but not really, because it's just a absorption, I guess, where the quote-unquote merge happens with Stephanie.
Yeah, it's one of those awkward positions where Palau is just a season unto itself, where there's no technical merge, there's no swap. It's just, hey, Stephanie, go, you know, join this other tribe because your tribe doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
But it is an instance of a single person coming from a tribe and being integrated into another complete tribe at that point. Mm-hmm. And yes, we do see her ability to navigate it there. I mean, Stephanie is a very strong Survivor player, so we understand that. And again, this is an instance where being the minority is almost an advantage because it gives that time for the majority to kind of eat themselves a little bit and thin themselves out before finalizing what they want to do moving forward. Obviously, it's not enough for Stephanie and Palau. That's why we get her back in Guatemala. But yeah, it's an interesting swap where, you know, it's so hard to like say what this really is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the instances quite similar to this, where it's one person going into an established group of people.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Phil and Alexa talked a lot about this. We're going to China next. And this swap is like one of the most iconic swaps. And it kind of, I feel, likens to this one in the sense that the other tribes are deciding your fate. So the other tribe was like, we want these two people.
Yeah.
All right, great. You're moving over there. Like, it wasn't, it's not even numbered. And it's another tribe deciding your game.
Yeah. So for those of you who may not know or need refreshing, in Survivor China, at this point in the game, the tribes both get a note saying, okay, select two people from the other tribe that you want on your tribe. And
it's, well, not really. They're just like, does it say that you want to swap with? Or like, who's the
strongest? No, that you want to take. You want to take. It doesn't mention that you're losing people, but they both tribes for some reason assumed they were just gaining more people for some reason. It's a fantastic episode of Survivor. I'm going to be honest. It's one of my favorites. It has that great, I'm good at Sudoku lines from PG. It's so funny. We get the challenge throw and everything. I love that episode of Survivor China. But as soon as that swap happens, it's very evident what you're supposed to do in that instance. You were supposed to throw the challenge because you've just taken the two strongest members from the opposing tribe and you're going to vote them out.
Yep.
It's just like what you have to do. And that was a big complaint about that swap when it happened. It still continues to be a big complaint about that swap. Like, what is that, 15 years later? 16 years later. Like, we're still complaining about the Survivor China swap because, man, Aaron got screwed. But it likens so much to this. And it's really interesting because there's a bit of randomness to it because the winning tribe from the reward thinks they're just sending people on this journey, right? Yep. They think they're just sending them on this journey. They know what's going on because somebody's already been on the journey. They've had to risk their votes for advantages and everything. So that's all they think is going on. It seems like an instance. Again, these journeys kind of make sense in this new era as your way of having intertribal connections, right?
Right.
And that seems to be what this is. Now, of course, they send them. It's an actual swap. And then ones move over. Luckily, they had no idea this was happening. Because could you imagine if it was just the strongest person from each tribe shifts over a tribe, and then everyone's just trying to throw the challenge to vote that person out?
That would be wild. Our last one that we want to talk about is still just kind of based on those numbers, is the in Philippines, where Matt Singh is reduced to Malcolm and Denise, and Calabao and Tandang absorb one person each.
Yeah, again, a situation where one person goes to a new tribe that's already established, and both of these individuals are able to navigate their way through it. That was kind of like, this is a disappointing thing about this episode of 44 in comparison. We do see gameplay from Josh to work these numbers, but not to like a majority instance. And it's almost impossible to do when there are only four people on the tribe. There's no incentive for people to swap around there. But like we see that from Denise and Malcolm and the way they play as they get introduced into these other tribes and how they have to work in order to lay low for a little bit so that they can get their footing again in these new tribes. Survivor really likes putting people in awkward positions sometimes.
Yeah.
And like I said, they compensated for it this time with these idols that expire at a certain time. But I almost feel like this would have been better if those idols didn't expire at the merge. Or the whatever, when they're on the same beach. Because then there's more of an incentive for them to hold on to them. And then they have to use their social game.
True, true. But I also don't need six idols running around the beach. Also, but hey. So after this swap moment, we have Carson coming onto Ratu. And him and Matthew get to talking. And Matthew's like, damn, I just lost Jamie. I need another person to hide under my wing and to be my vote. And he talks to Carson, and we were like, this kind of sort of feels like a Tony LJ moment of like other opposing tribes come together at a swap and talk and like feel some sort of camaraderie with each other where, you know, LJ and Tony play idols for each other, and they started on separate tribes, but came together at a swap, shared some information, and felt like they could trust each other moving forward in the game.
Yeah, it is a big social move for Matthew here. I don't know if it'll pay off. We'll have to wait and see in the future. But one of the other instances that this really reminded me of, and it's not quite the same because the situation's a little different, but it's not quite often that we get people so openly sharing information about like tribe dynamics at these swaps because it is dangerous, right? It's a very dangerous thing to do. We've seen many people screwed over for providing information like this. Think of the swap in Amazon, right? Where the information sharing happened prior to the actual swap happening.
Dave just Jenna spews everything and Dave uses it.
Yeah, Dave uses it completely to his advantage to not just decide what the swap tribes are, but also to pull Heidi over to the guy's side on that swap tribe that they have there, right? It's that sharing of information. Information is one of the most important things you can have in Survivor. That's why, you know, people say don't tell people about your advantages. Like, having any information you have has leverage. And that's what we see Matthew doing here, is leveraging mm-hmm. his knowledge of, yes, a fake thing, but like he never has to admit that it's fake that Jamie has this idol. Mm-hmm.
You know where else we see a tribe swap with a lot of shared information? All-Stars. So go join the Patreon to hear us talk about the little brunch that these castaways have with each other while they play the game. So
and another instance, like we have the Thailand instance, which isn't a swap, right? It's they mm-hmm. assume it's the merge, and Shein's like ready to jump ship and sending all this information.
Shein is also the one spilling it all stuff.
Yeah, I mean Shein just likes Shein really likes just like playing all out. And mm-hmm. I kind of forgot how much I love Shein until I watched this episode of All Stars today. But it's great. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. So join the Patreon so you can listen to us talk about it.
Yes. All right. Now we are moving over to the immunity challenge. We're mainly focusing on these keys that they have mm-hmm. to jump and get, because what a journey these keys have gone on. The first time we see like a key situation over water is they have to smash a box, and this key just has a ribbon on it and it sinks straight to the bottom. Yeah. And that's when we get people confused on where it is, have to swim back. Somebody has to go and grab their key, gets lost in the tide. It's a whole big thing. There's pieces smashed below them and floating on the water. And I like this version of it better. I like the visual of it better. Mm-hmm. And I like that they can lose the key.
Yeah, that's kind of like in those iconic moments in like Cook Islands and stuff where they're smashing these boxes and everything. And Micronesia as well, like they're smashing the boxes and they're trying to get these keys. And they can get hung up there because you don't know if you smashed it in the right spot for the key to drop down.
Yeah, it could be still up there and you're trying to look on the floor to try and find the key, but it still could be up in the box. I like the uncertainty of this a little mm-hmm. bit more. And then we get, you know, the smash the box, but it has a buoy attached to it. And then we just basically get straight up key on a buoy, jump and grab it. Which I think they have changed distances since
it's not great.
The big one that we see and that a lot of people will probably remember is Adam Klein Winners at War, because that key was impossible to reach. Parvati couldn't get it, Adam couldn't get it, like Denise couldn't get it, nobody could jump to grab this key, and Adam had been the closest one, so he kept having to go over and over and over to try and jump and grab this key. And it's crazy that, like, you know, there are short people on this cast. It should be in a position where short people can grab this key, or if they can't jump, like, it should be a little bit more accessible, which I think this one went the opposite in 44 of, it felt like everyone could reach out and grab this key. Like, it felt like nobody would miss this.
Except for Lauren, because she did miss it. Right? Like, and like, that's the interesting thing about it is, it's just, if you look at the statue thing, like, not every survivor challenge is going to be fair. They try to make it as fair as possible, right? Like, mm-hmm. whenever they're dealing with weights, it's always based on body mass and stuff like that, and proportion of starting weight. And that makes sense. But like in tribal challenges, when you need multiple people to do the same thing and like you have to get something high, short people have a very distinct disadvantage.
Hi.
And that's kind of one of the things where the old iteration of this challenge is a lot more fair to people.
Yeah, because you have a club, you can like places to knit, like, I don't know. I just think that another moment with this is Lydia from 42 just absolutely eating the ocean after that. And I was just like, this would be me. If I am doing this challenge, Lydia is me. because I would absolutely fail like that trying to get it, because I can't jump and I'm 5'4" and I can't, like, I'm not that tall. So I just think this needs to go back. I like a lot of ways that challenges are evolving, but I think this specific thing needs to go back to the boxes, either with the buoys so we don't lose the key. Like, we could compromise here, Survivor. But I do like the smashing the box aspect of it.
I wonder if there's, like, a consideration to jumping with the club is more dangerous than jumping by without it. And, like, maybe that's a consideration the production took into. We don't have any reason to think that. But maybe it is, because you would think production would go with a more visually appealing one, which is definitely the instance of
they're just making it. They just made this jump higher than I think the club is. The platform's a little shorter and closer to the water, or like further out, so the tide is higher. But I think there's not that huge smash into the water because they have to be able to somewhat easily find the key.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But that isn't the only thing moment in this immunity challenge that harkens back to another, right?
Oh, no. There is a floating balance beam, everybody. So, you know, we cannot talk. We can't avoid the Ceree balance beam moment.
Honestly, I'm surprised the show avoided the Ceree balance beam moment.
I know, right? My girlfriend, while watching this, was like, you could talk about the Ceree moment on the podcast. And so here we are. We have this iconic moment of Ceree crossing the balance beam after the other tribe had won immunity or reward or whatever it was. And everyone swims back out to cheer her on and cross that balance beam. And it was an iconic moment at the time, but I feel like it has to stay in that capsule. We can't keep talking about it, otherwise it will lose. Like, we can't keep referencing it in, like, I want that moment because I want to be more like Ceree, or like, I want to have that Ceree moment where feel what she felt. Like, it's great to look back on for the camaraderie of the cast and cheering her on to finish. I just think it's been so overplayed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, luckily Jam Jam actually is able to complete this balance beam.
Yes.
So we don't have to worry about that. And I mean, like, for a moment there, it almost seemed like he was like, Christmas from Vanuatu, right? I just like get hung up on this balance beam and make it so that they couldn't win it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boys and balance beams do not work out real well, because Kane also struggled as well. And you know, that pretty much wraps up this immunity challenge, and we're going to go to tribal, because the main thing to take away from this tribal council is the swapped person in the minority stays in the game, and it's someone from the majority that goes home. And that, you know, is Silas in Africa. He has his own tribe mates turn on him because he alienated them in the old tribe, and they were just like, nah, you're out.
Yeah, and like that isn't quite the same, because obviously it was 3-3 in Africa.
Yeah.
But we do see that moment where it's just like, okay, well, we can't really do this. And it's much easier.
It has Carolyn turned on her own to vote out Sarah. She didn't have to because he had the idol, but like, it's kind of.
She didn't have to, and there was like literally no reason for her to, which is the most interesting thing about this entire situation, is there is no incentive. There's no real strategic incentive for Carolyn to flip here.
Yep.
Right? Because you're not flipping to, okay, we're going to flip and it's, you know, even numbers or whatever. It's not like you're switching to a side that has more numbers. You're just tying up the numbers. There's so little logic to the situation that I'm really interested for Carolyn's post-game press to talk about this situation, because I I really want to know, like, was this an emotional response to the way Jam Jam was treating her? Because from what we saw in the episode, Jam Jam was being kind of condescending to her and not really allowing her to have any agency in the game. Is this a clawback for that agency because she felt like she didn't have any? Is this a reaction to the fact that Josh literally showed her an immunity idol? Right? Like, I'm really curious to it because in Africa, that wasn't the case. In Africa, it was a question of, okay, well, we can vote here, we can share information and stuff. And back in Africa days, you know, tied votes, the person with the most previous votes went home.
No, not right? In Africa. It was questions. We went to trivia, African trivia of like safety and like what's bad in Africa.
They didn't know that at that point, and they assumed it was the same as the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They assumed it was tied votes.
Yeah, and that's why Lindsay wanted to keep her votes secret so they didn't know.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it was maybe with Africa, it was votes. And then if they had the same number, trivia or something like that, because Lindsay and Carl both went to trivia.
That's right.
Because they didn't have any previous votes.
Right. Yeah.
And not a rock.
Yes, of course. Because that's the time we were living in Africa. And that was the incentive to switch your vote there, was to prevent a tie situation. And again, it's what's so weird about this one.
Now we're going to go to one of the best seasons, Marquesas. In Gabe going home, because this is also a very interesting situation, because he's like, I just want to create a community, man. I don't want to play the game. So like, he kind of throws himself under the bus a little bit, but they still could have kept him to just keep on keeping on. But they kept the old Mater Amu members and voted out one of the Rotu members.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, in that case, Gabe really kind of, like, he asked for it, literally. He asked for it. It makes it a lot different than this situation. But when you are that minority, you take advantage of it. You go with it, right? Exactly. You take anything you can.
They were like, oh, Gabe's going great. We're fine with Gabe.
Yeah. Then, of course, we have the All-Stars moment.
Yeah, so patreon.com /Survivor Specialist. All right, great. Cool. And then Guatemala.
Yeah, we have all that mess and that swap there where
Judd and Stephanie finally are on the same beach and are just like, wow, New Jersey, we're kindred spirits. Let's go and play this game together. And he throws all his old NACU members under the bus and is just like, I'm moving forward with new NACU members.
Yeah. It's exactly one of those moments where it's like, most of the times it doesn't make sense to switch in a swap, like your allegiances and everything, but sometimes you just connect with someone and you're like, I have to do this. It's the thing that makes the most sense to me, because in the end, I know, and in the end, like, people don't put enough emphasis on the fact that you want to play Survivor with people you like and people you get along with. It's so much easier to have alliances with those people. Yes, people can think about, oh, I want to have these meat shields. I want to have this goat. Like, you can think of all that all you want. In the end, you just want to play with people you enjoy. And if you are swapped with people you don't enjoy, you're going to vote them out.
Yeah. And our last topic that we want to talk about is the Millennials versus Gen X swaps, where all three go to Tribal Council and all three vote out a person in the majority, and the minority stays another day.
Yeah, we covered one of those episodes already on the Patreon, but we also have like the iconic Michaela boot, and then there's also the...
Paul goes home. I think before the swap?
Paul was before the swap.
It's Cece, Michaela, and someone else.
Yeah, someone else. It was a millennial, right?
Yeah, Figgy. There we go.
Right, Figgy. Yeah.
I was like, oh, there's someone on orange.
Yes. Yeah, and it's just one of those interesting situations. And again, it has to do with like how people are getting along with each other. At that point, we're getting close to a merge, so people are thinking of that next level of the game. Mm-hmm. And that swap, if you ask me, that swap's happening at about the exact same time we're seeing this swap here. I imagine we go one, maybe two more before we get that mergatory episode.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so that is this week's episode of Survivor, but in the past.
Yeah, that's right. Survivor Rewind 44, episode 4. It was a fun one to talk about, McKenna, but we have so much more to say. We've said it many times already, but sign up for that Patreon. Check us out tomorrow because we are going to be
All Stars episode 10. So if you want to give that a rewatch, All Stars episode 10.
It could be episode 9, depending on how your episodes are numbered, because All Stars was still one of those time periods where they had those weird recap episodes.
Yes. So the one right after the recap.
Yes. So we'll be talking about that on the Patreon. That'll be ready for you guys tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Don't forget to check out the episode recap every week with Phil and Alexa. They'll also be coming at you on Monday with their predictions and power rankings. Hey, if you're watching this video, make sure you like and subscribe. Click that bell for notifications. We love it when you do that. And that way you know when we'll be back next week.
Alrighty, everyone. Goodbye.